Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Lolam Ayvi Adam Atzmo Lidei Nisayon. Person should not bring himself to a test or put himself in a precarious position which could lead to a poor outcome. That's what we say every morning, right? After we say Birkot HaShachar, we say, please Hashem, don't test us, don't put us in a position of a test. Sharei David Melech Yisrael Ayvi Atzmo Lidei Nisayon V'Nikshal. He brought himself into that position, and he failed in overcoming whatever test that he had asked for. Amar lepanav, Ribono Shalom, mipnei ma omrim, Elokei Abraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov. What is the reason that the Shmona Esrei, the first bracha, begins with the three avot, Bein omrim, Elokei David, and we don't say Elokei David? I want to be amongst the big guns. I want to have my name there too. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and I want David there as well. David we do have. We have his bracha that comes up with the Birkot HaTorah. Magen David, which is on par with Magen Avraham. So David says, then why don't I also get Elokei David, like Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov? So the question is, why can I not be amongst them? Amar inu minsuli, v'atlo minsitli. I tested them, and they passed the flying colors. I haven't tested you. Amar lefanav ribono shel olam, bichaneni v'naseni. Go ahead, examine me, test me, shenamar. The pasuk says in Tehillim, bichaneni Hashem v'naseni, examine Hashem, test me, tzarfak yiliotai v'libi. Go ahead, and the word tzarfak can either mean to smelt, or you could see here meaning the word test. And test my kidneys and my heart, which is test my inner feelings, my inner drive. Go ahead and see. Amar, Hashem says, Minzana lecha. I'm going to go ahead and test you. Avidna milta badach, but I'm going to give you a huge advantage over the avot. Dilidu loho ditinu, vilu ana kamuduna lecha, dimensina lecha, bidvar erva. The avot, I didn't tell them, first of all, that I was testing them, and I also didn't tell them what I was testing them with. You, on the other hand, I'm telling you I'm going to test you. And I'm telling you that the test is going to be bidvar erva, with something to do with arayot. Miyad, vahileit erev, vayakam David, me'amishkavo. So that is the introduction now, the background story that the Gemara gives to the story of Bathsheba that's found in Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud Aleph. David got up out of his bed in the evening time. Am Rav Yehuda, shafach mishkavo shel laila, the mishkavo shel yom. He changed around his pattern of behavior. He changed that what he did at night to the daytime. Usually at night is when he would be together with his wives. Instead, he switched it to be during the daytime. He knew he was going to get tested by a rayot, so he wanted to make sure that he had no desire. And so he took care of his desires. He was together with his wives during the day in order that he would have absolutely no desire and the test would be easy and pass with flying colors. He forgot this concept. Eiver katan yesh badam. There's a small member in the person. Masbio ra'ev. If you satisfy it, it gets more hungry. Marivo sava. If you starve it, then it is satisfied. The Gemara uses it in the context here and in other places to refer eiver katan to the particular male member. But you could say it in general about gashmiut or one's desires or satisfying one's desires. The more that a person feeds into their desires, the more they want. The less a person feeds into the desires, the less they want. It works with food and alcohol and all these other things. The more a person drinks, the more they want to drink. The less they drink, the less desire they have for it. Food, the more a person eats, the more they want to eat. The less they eat, the less they have a desire to eat. And similar over here with regards to arayot, or with regards to sexual desire, it's the same thing. David HaMelech thinks that he's solving the problem by taking care of his sexual desire, by being together with his wives. All that did was increase the desire. It just fed into the desire rather than taking away the desire. V'italeich agag beit HaMelech. It picks up where we left off in the previous pasuk, that David got up out of his bed in the evening time, and then he walked on the roof of the palace of the king, and he saw a woman who was bathing on the roof. In case you had any doubts, she was very beautiful, very good looking. Bathsheba Hava kachayfa resha. The Gemara interjects in the psukim with commentary here. Batsheva was out there shampooing, cleaning her hair. Tute chalata. She was under or behind a canopy, or Rashi translates it as a kaveret, which normally means a hive, but over here would mean some sort of screen, some sort of bamboo type of screen, or like the lulav leaves, the way that you weave them together, with some sort of separation between her and David HaMelech. The assumption of the Gemara being that she wouldn't have just been on her roof, naked, shampooing and washing herself, although the truth is, it's at night. And that time, when there was no artificial lighting, then it was dark at night, and she might have been doing it in the privacy of the night on her roof. But here, the Gemara wants to suggest that not only that, but she also had some sort of separator there. She wasn't just exposed to everybody. Ata Satan idmilei kitziparto. The Satan shows up and appears like a bird to David HaMelech. Patak begira. David shot an arrow at it, trying to kill the bird or capture the bird. Patka nechalta. Instead of hitting the bird, the arrow misses and he knocks down the kaveret. Whatever that screen was, whatever the divider was, he knocks it down. Igle, she was then exposed. Bechazio, he saw her. Biad, now here's the continuation of the pasuk. The Gemara each time is interjecting background information to the story in the pasuk, and now we're back to the subsequent pasuk now. Vayishlach David, vayidrosh laisha. David went ahead and asked about this woman. Vayomer, and they explained to him, alo zot, Batsheva bat Eliam. Isn't that Batsheva the daughter of Eliam, who we saw earlier in the perek? Eliam is the son of Achitophel, and that Batsheva was the granddaughter of Achitophel. Eshet Uriah Achite, the wife of Uriah Achite. Vayishlach David malachim. David sent messengers. Vayikacheha, and they took her. Vatavo elav, she was brought to the palace. Vayishkavima, and he slept with her. Vehi mitkadeshet mitumata, and she was purifying herself from her tuma. So the Gemara sees this in a religious context, which is that she was a nida before, and the reason she was washing herself or bathing herself was because she was going to the mikveh to be mitaher herself. The real issue that comes up is that she was mitkadesh and mitumata, that put her in a prime position to become pregnant, which is the outcome of the story, is that she becomes pregnant from this tryst or liaison with David HaMelech, Bateshev El Beita, and she goes back to her house, and then the story continues that she is pregnant, she sends to David that I am pregnant, and that continues that whole story of the perek of Batsheva. Over here, it seems that Batsheva is an innocent victim. She has nothing to do with this. David sends his messengers over there, and they take her and bring her to the palace. It's not like she's asked any questions. It's not like they're inquiring of her if she's interested. She's brought to the palace. She just does what she's told to do. Doesn't sound like she has any choice in the matter. That's number one. Number two is, the pasuk makes it seem that David was clearly aware of the fact that she was a married woman because they give him the information that she was a married woman. We saw this in the other Masechtot where the Gemara says, Kol Omer David Chata, Inu Elo Toeh. And the Gemara speaks about that the troops of Beit David used to give a divorce before they went out to battle, whether it was a divorce al Tanai, like Rashi says, or the way the Rabbeinu Tam says, that they literally divorced their wives. There the Gemara tries to reconcile, deal with the severity of what's going on over here, that David's aware of the fact that she's married, and then how could he engage with her, given that she was married? Pshat, or the way that the psukim read, the way that the Gemara's reading them here, it's very hard to say, Kol Omer David Chata Inu Toeh, because over here the Gemara clearly takes a position that David Chata, that he did sin or that he did fail in the test. Finally, and that's what it says in Tehillim. Bachanta libi, bakadata lailo. You tested, examined my heart. You visited at night. Tsarachtani baltimta. Pshata pasuk is, you tested me, or you smelted me. Baltimta, and found nothing. Zamoti balya burpi. Let my mouth not cause any transgression. So here, the Gemara is going to interpret the pasuk in the context of the story that we just gave, which is, Amar, Iku Zamama Nafabu Pumei Demand Sunili, Alo Amar Kiha Milta. I'll buy that a reins or a bit would have been put in the mouth of the one who hates me, euphemistically in my mouth, and I never said such a thing, because then I wouldn't have ended up in this problem of being tested. In essence, what David is saying is, I asked for trouble, and I got in trouble. Had I not said anything, I would never got myself in trouble. I wish that I hadn't been my own worst enemy. I had reined in my mouth and not asked for this test from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So as Rashi notes, the way that they are interpreting the pasuk is, Pachanta libi, this was the test, Pakadat alayla. It was a nighttime test. The test came at night. Tzaraftani baltimtza, and you tested me. Instead of the pshat pasuk, which is you didn't find anything, paltim says you didn't find me innocent. You tested me or you smelted me and you didn't find me clean. Zamoti b'yavurpi. And then I wish I had some sort of reins on my mouth to stop myself from asking for this test. That's why the Gemara is interpreting the pasuk in the light of what we're saying here, instead of being a pasuk where it's really positive, saying that you tested me and you found nothing, and don't let my mouth get me into trouble or transgress. Over here, the Gemara is interpreting it as if it all is negative, which is, I was tested, and you found me wanting. I spoke, and that was the transgression. I wish I hadn't spoken, but I did speak, and that led me to the Bachanta Libi, Pekadat Elayla. You tested my heart, and you visited at night. The test happened at night. Dorash Rava, my dichtiv, what is meant by Lamnatzeach L'David, Bashem Chasiti, Eich Tomru L'Nafshi, Nudi, Harkeim Mit Sipor. Lamanatzeach, whatever the meaning of that word is, whether it means the musicians, the David of David. Bashem Chasiti, I put my trust in Hashem. Eich tomru l'nafshi, how do I say to my soul, Nudi harkeim tzipor, flee to the mountains like a bird? And obviously the Gemara is going to pick up on this in the context of the story before, which is, Amar David, ifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel Olam, mecholi ala oto avon. Forgive me for that sin. Shalom yomru. So people won't say, Harshabachem tzipor nidadato. The great mountain amongst you, a bird caused him to flee, or a bird shook him from his foundations, which again is playing to the story before that the Satan appeared like a bird, which caused David to shoot the arrow, which knocked off the separator between Bathsheba and himself, and that's what got the whole problem started. So he's saying this little bird caused all the problem. Don't let people say that this great leader, the Melech, the king, was thrown off his feet by a little bird, or felled by a little bird. Darish Rava, Maidichtiv, what does it mean in the Pasuk? Now, Tehillim Nun Aleph is the Tehillim about the sin of Bathsheba. It says there, Lecha, the Batcha Chatati, to you alone I have sinned, God, V'arav Einecha Asiti, and I did evil in your eyes, L'man Tizdak B'Davrecha Tizkeh B'Shoftecha, in order that you should be justified in your sentence, and that your judgment should be clear. Amar David lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a very tenuous claim. David says to Hashem, Galya v'adia kamach, you know it's clear to you, di bayi l'michpei li'yitzri habakafina. Had I wanted to succeed at restraining my desires, I certainly would have succeeded. Ela amina, but I said to myself, delo lemru, Avdo, Kafya, or Zachi Lemare, that the servant bested the master. Here, David asked for Elokei David. He asked to be tested. Had he passed the test, then he would have basically won in that sense. He would have bested God because he would have said, I should be Elokei David because I passed the test. So David says, I failed the test in order that you should be right in this situation. It's a very tenuous claim. Because that's anybody can make that claim, which is, God, I knew things were going to be this way, so I just wanted to fail the test so that you wouldn't look bad. That's a very difficult position. Now, there was a conversation before. It's not like this came out of nowhere. There was a conversation about testing him, but nevertheless, it's a very difficult claim to stand on. Darash Rava, Ma'idichtiv, Ki ani latzela nachon, umachovi negdi tamid. The pshat pasuk is that I am ready to fall, Umachovi negdi tamid, and my pain is continuously before me. Rava is going to darshan the word tzela here to refer to the tzela, the side or the rib, going back to Breshit, which is Ruuya ita Bathsheba bat Eliam le David misheshet yemei Breshit. Bathsheba was the designated wife for David all the way back from creation. Again, the tzela means or represents the woman who's created from man. And the return of the tzela is the union of the man and the woman. So over here it says, Kani the tzela nachon. Nachon over here, it means ready, which means that it was appropriate or fitting. The tzela, the rib, was fitting, or we were a good couple. Me and Batsheva, umachovi negdi tamid, ela shebae elav b'machov. But instead, it came to him with tremendous pain. He jumped the gun. Instead of waiting for the appropriate time, or when she would have been the good wife for him, he jumped the gun, and then it came to him through pain, instead of normal way that would have been appropriate. It is interesting, not because of the context of our Gemara, but because we know in the end, Batsheva's second child that she has is Shlomo HaMelech, who ends up being the inheritor to the throne, the crown prince, the king that takes over after David HaMelech. The fact that Shlomo is picked as the king somewhat corroborates what Rav is suggesting over here, that Batsheva was the one who was appropriate for David HaMelech because their child is the one who takes over on the throne. Just David went a little early on that. Had he waited, had Uriah been killed in battle or something had happened, she had lost her husband at some point, you might have had to have her behead there. The same thing that happened with Abigail back in Shmuel Aleph, where Nabal, it dies, and then David HaMelech was able to take Abigail without any problem, even though she was married when she met him. Nevertheless, her husband passes away, and then he marries her. The same thing could have happened to Batsheva, just that he took her while she was still married and then had to engineer the death of her husband in order to make it okay to be together with this woman. Those that suggest that Kol Amer David Chata Einu Toeh have to agree that the Psukim seem to lay out a very negative picture. And the Pasuk in Malachim says that David is held accountable, that he didn't do anything wrong, with the exception of the killing of Uriah Hiti, or the incident dealing with Batsheva. So he is held responsible for what happens over here. What they do is interpret the Psukim not to be something that is a chait, but rather something that was inappropriate. So if they say that there wasn't a sin in the letter of the law, there was still a breach of the spirit of the law. Here his troops are out at battle. Even if they divorce the wives before they leave, the intent of the divorce is so that if they're killed in battle, then their wives will not be agunot. The intent is not so that the king can't steal their wives while they're out at battle. That's number one. Number two is, he later then sets up Uriah Hiti to die in the battle. Navi does implicate him with that. That might have been worse than the original sin with Batsheva, is the killing of Uriah Hiti, and that's where the Pasuk says in Malachim, that David's sin was that he killed Uriah Hiti. But even if you say, the Gemara also suggested that Uriah Hiti was a Moreid B'Malchut. He refused the command of the king, therefore he's a Moreid B'Malchut. So once again, in the letter of the law, they can justify David's action. In the spirit of the law, it's clear that what David is doing is not the cleanest thing. And that's how they'll interpret these psukim over here, that it implicates David in not acting appropriately, even though in the letter of the law there's no sin. But clearly this Gemara is not taking that position that David lo chata, ela David chata. But they do it in a way that takes away some of the sting, which is to say that it was a test, rather than David initiating all of a sudden, then doing something out of the blue. They say that there's a context to this, and the context was that David was asking to be tested. When you're asking to be tested, then you put yourself at a lot of risk. And that's how they give the background to it. So they give some justification, but they still seemingly believe that there is a sin here which would be against that position in the Gemara that Kol Amer David Chata in El Toeh. Chayin Tani Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Ruei Ta the David the Batsheva Bat Eliam, Ela She'achla Paga, that Batsheva was the rightful woman or wife for David HaMelech. He just ate her while she was still immature. That's the description of dates or figs. When they're in their immature state, they call them a Paga. It is that they are prematurely being eaten, and the same thing over here. He prematurely took Batsheva. There's some that point out that Batsheva is a species or a name of one of the types of figs. And so therefore, the mashal of Paga matches up with the name of Batsheva. Darash Rava, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk? Ubitzali samchu, when I stumbled, they celebrated. Venesafu, and they gathered together. Ne'esfu alai nechim v'lo yadati. So now the word nechim in the modern Hebrew is to use people who are handicapped people who have disabilities. Over here in the Pasuk, it may not reference that. It may reference to wretches, people who were looking out for the detriment of David HaMelech, wretches that I did not know or whom I had no connection with. Karu velo damu. They tore at me velo damu without ceasing. Now the Gemara is going to darshan this pasuk. Amar David lefnei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shalom, Galoy v'yadu lefnecha, shehem hayu korim bisari. If they tore open my flesh, lo yadami shotet, my blood would not drip out. Again, we saw this earlier in the Masechta. Velo od ela b'shah shehem oskim ba'arba mitot beitin. When in the Beit Midrash, they're discussing the four death penalties of Beitin, meaning the prakim that we learned all through Sanhedrin. Poskemi mishnatan, they take a little breather. Vomrimli, and they say to me, David, abali shadish, mitatoba meh. Someone who sleeps with a married woman, what is the punishment? Amarti lahem, I respond to them, abali shadish, mitatoba chenek. In Ochanami, it's one of the arba mitot Beitin. Someone who sleeps with his friend's wife is subject to chenek. V'yesh lo chenek lo lam haba. But he does have a portion in lam haba. Aba lam albin pnei chaviro birabim. Someone who embarrasses their friend in public ain't lo chenek lo lam haba. David's response is, yeah, you got me. But on the other hand, you got me in a way that you're not going to get out of. Your embarrassing me is much worse than the sin that I did in terms of the adultery. There the Gemara continues on, as we saw earlier in the Masechta, about this discussion, how David is being embarrassed by his rebellion and the back and forth that goes on between them. It's a little more extensive in the other times that the Gemara was quoted. Even when David was on his deathbed, he still maintained his normal routine, which is that he had 18 wives. That is based on what Nathan and Navi says to him after the Chet of Bathsheba, that Hashem says to him, if you want, I can be Mosif Lecha Kahena V'Kahena. I can add to you like this and like this. David at that point already had 6 wives, and so the Gemara learns for Kahena Kahena that he could have had another 6 and another 6. He has allowed or entitled to have 18 wives, which the Gemara sees as the maximum number of wives that a king can have is 18. So here the Gemara is saying, based on that statement in Natan Avid, the assumption is David God took his full lot of wives, and he had 18 wives. He can have concubines beyond that, but in terms of wives, he can only have 18 wives. And the Gemara is saying over here that he kept up his normal routine, which is that he has onah. Onah is the responsibility of a husband to his wife to ensure that she is satisfied physically. And so he kept up his routine with his all of his 18 wives to perform the onah. Shneamar, the pasuk says, Yagati banchati achse b'chol laila mitati b'dimati arsi amset. Pasuk is familiar to you because it is the Perek in Tehillim that we use for tachanun. The pashtut of pasuk is Yagati, I was weary banchati from my moaning achse b'chol laila mitati. I was swimming in my bed each night. The reason he's swimming is because he is bawling or crying, which is brought out b'dimati. Arsi amset. My couch is drenched with my tears. So this is talking about the pain or the difficulty, the predicament that he's in, and that he's crying and he is miserable and moaning. That is what Tachanun is about, is the difficult predicament that the person is in, David HaMelech in this case, asking Hashem to take revenge or protect the individual, to stand up for the individual so that he can be taken out of that pain. That's the story that we know also with regards to the Shamta of Rabbi Eliezer, as to that his wife would not let him say Tachanun, because when he said Tachanun, right away, the Nasi, her brother, died, because he had put him into Shamta, excommunicated him. So we see that the idea of Tachanun is that when people cause pain or there are difficulties for the individual, you're asking Hashem to save you, take care of you. And so that's what David is describing over here in Pashtut. The Gemara reads it as, Yagati banchati, afilu bishat anchati. Even at my time of moaning, which mean when I was aged, when I was infirm, or I was on my deathbed, ascha b'cholayla mitati. Rashi translates, ascha b'cholayla mitati. The play on the word ascha is from echa, which is schi u'maos, which means filth. And that which is disgusting, Mitate is the tashmish amita, which is that I sullied myself or dirtied myself, became tamei, because of the fact that I was al mitati, doing tashmish amita. And then bidimarti, RCM said, Rashi views as being, I was mishati mati, at the time of my crying, RCM said, I pressed down on my bed, or I was performing tashmish amita. The other hand, the Yad Ramav used the word ascheh, coming from the word sicha, to speak, which is a euphemistic term that's used by Chazal to reference to tashmish amita. So Rashi sees ascheh from schi, and whereas the Yad Ramav says ascheh sicha, and that's how they say that it was referring to tashmish amita. The Gemara sees in that pasuk a statement about David's kibya bezonah, but also maybe a little bit about David's desire, or strong desire for women, that might also have been his downfall or the problem that he had with Bathsheba. Rashi over here says that he did it out of altruistic reasons, which is he didn't want to leave his wives without their physical comfort. So Rashi sees it as being stated positively, that he pushed himself to take care of his wives. I think that the Gemara's view here is probably that it's showing how much desire David had and what a test it was for him in terms of Bathsheba. The Gemara in other places actually uses this for David to suggest that he was doing kapara, or atonement for his sin with Bathsheba, and that is when he brings Avishag Ashunamit to warm him in bed. The Gemara over there says that despite the fact that she was in his bed with him, he did not touch her, because he already had 18 wives, he couldn't take her as an additional wife, which was what Avishag Shunamit had asked, but he does not touch her, and the Gemara there brings from the Perek about Bathsheba, that he shows or demonstrates that he's able to sleep with Bathsheba and still has desire, and despite that desire, he doesn't touch Avishag Shunamit. I think in that context, this pasuk would have the same meaning, which was David's desire was still in full force, and he doesn't touch Avishag Shunamit, which in a sense is the rectification or the kapara for what happened with Bathsheba, although that all presumes that David was in such a state. From the psukim again, he was weak, he was infirm, it wasn't like he had the desire, and that's why Avishag Shunamit is not a problem for him, because he's too old and too sick to have the desire for her. But the Gemara here builds it up to indicate that it has a sense of atonement for what David had done with Bathsheba. David wanted to worship Avodah Zarah Shnemar. Again, Pashtut HaPasuk is not what the Gemara is saying, which is David Ba'ad Arush. David crested the hill. Asher Yishtachaveh Sham Lelokim. Place where people bow down to God. But David in this case is fleeing the city because Absalom is coming. He's rebelling and he's coming to the city. David could have taken a stand in the city and locked himself in the city, and that would have led to a long siege and probably a pretty bloody battle. David decides, for the betterment of everyone, to flee from the city and let Absalom come in without any fight. As he deserts the city or leaves the city, he goes out towards the Midbar, the place where David spent a lot of time in Shmuel Aleph, places that he's familiar with, but he's going towards the Yarden, to cross the Yarden, to get himself or afford himself some protection, or give himself a buffer between him and Absalom. So when he leaves the city, he's going out to the east, and you're in Yerushalayim, when you're going out to the east, Har HaZeitim is on your eastern side, and you go over to Har HaZeitim, and then you crest towards the Midbar. Har HaZeitim, from Har HaZeitim, you can do that if you go to the Shul in Hebrew University, the Beit Midrash there has a window directly looking over Har HaBayit. Or if you go to Beit Dorot, again, on Har HaZeitim, you can look back and you can see right over onto Har HaBayit. What the Pasuk is referring to is people who departed from Yerushalayim, or people who are coming to Yerushalayim when they crested Har HaZeitim. They reached the top of Har HaZeitim. If you were approaching Yerushalayim, you'd bow down to God, because that'd be the first time you saw the Mikdash, you saw Har HaBayit. And if you were leaving, you would take leave of Har HaBayit, because that would be the last point in which you could see Har HaBayit, because once you crested the hill on the other side, you wouldn't see it. So that's what it means here. David is cresting the hill where people bow down to God. It's referencing that he went over the top of Har HaZeitim. Over there, it's describing how he leaves Yerushalayim, goes down through the valley, climbs the hill, and then goes over the other side of the hill. The Gemara says of this, Ein Rosh El Avodah Zarah. The reference here, Ba'ad HaRosh, Rosh refers to Avodah Zarah, Shnemar, the pasuk in Daniel. Ve'o Tzalma Reshei Didahav Tav. The head of the idol was made out of this pure or beautiful gold. So you see there, Reshei, in a reference to a Tzelem, in reference to Avodah Zarah. So now the Gemara will explain what this means, that David HaMelech wanted to perform Avodah Zarah. Not that he believed in it, but he thought it might solve a problem, which is when he crossed the hill, as he's going over the hill, Hushai Arki approaches him. Karua kukutanto, his garments are rent, ba'adamal rosho, dirt on his head. He is the avelut over the fact that David is fleeing Yerushalayim and the takeover of Absalom. David tells Hushai Arki, you're too old, you're going to slow us down, you're going to be a burden. Do me a favor, go back into Yerushalayim. And how you can help us is by trying to undermine the advice of Achitofel, which he does succeed at doing, and that's what saves David HaMelech and is the end for Absalom as well as Achitofel. Amar lo David, Yomru Melech Shekamotcha Yavod Avodah Zarah. Hushai Arki, now the Gemara invents this conversation between them. Hushai says to him, they're going to say about you, a king of your stature worship Avodah Zarah. Amar lo Melech Shekamoti Yargenu Beno, says, a king like me, his son is going to kill him. Mutav Yavod Avodah Zarah Ayit Chalel Shem Shemayim Yifrasya. Better that I worship Avodah Zarah then Hashem's name be desecrated in public. The problem is that David is being thrown out of Yerushalayim. He's going to be killed by his own son. And people are going to say, the tzaddik, David HaMelech, how could it be that his son rebelled against him and killed him? And people are going to think, this is the reward for someone like David HaMelech, and that's going to be a chilul Hashem. It's going to be a profaning of God's name in public. So David HaMelech says, let me justify the punishment. If I worship Avodah Zarah, not that I believe in it, but if I bow down to Avodah Zarah, then everybody will know that the reason I'm getting killed here, or the reason this is happening, is because of the sin. So what he wants to do is basically invent an excuse that people could hang their hats on to say why David is getting killed, and not this, let this be a chilul Hashem that David is thrown out, and people think, how could it be that the great Tzaddik David is being thrown out by his son? Amar Maitaima Kenesivat Yifat Toar. So then Hushai Arki pushes back against him a little bit and says, why did you marry a Yifat Toar? So this again is an assumption of the Gemara. David HaMelech is married to Macha, who was the daughter of Tamai Melech Geshur. So David has an alliance with Melech Geshur, and he ends up marrying his daughter Macha. The Gemara has a problem with that. Rashi notes what the problem is. Is that we don't find the Torah ever criticizing David for marrying Bat Talmai Macha, who was a non-Jewish woman. And if she was a non-Jewish woman, how is it possible that he married her? And as Rashi quotes the Pasuk from Melachim Aleph that we said before, that the Pasuk says the only thing that David did wrong was Rak Bedvar Uriah Chiti. The issue of Uriah Chiti was the sin that David was held accountable for, but besides that, he didn't have any sin. If he married a non-Jewish woman, that should have been a sin. So the Gemara solves that problem and says she was a Yifat Toar. Yifat Toar is that someone who's taken into captivity in a battle. Here it says that David, Tafsa David b'milchama, that he must have taken her in battle. The thing is that it doesn't seem like there was any battle between them. Actually, it seems like they had an alliance. Now, it's not clear where the battle was. It doesn't really seem that there was any battle for this. What the Gemara is trying to do is justify that marriage to Macha. The same problem you have with Shlomo HaMelech when he marries Bat Paro, which is also, she's not Jewish. The Rambam seemingly tries to deal with that problem. It says that these women had a partial conversion. They had big Yehutan. They married them in their conversions, but they were questionable conversions. Whether they were questionable because they did it just to get married, or they were questionable because they weren't full-fledged conversions or proper conversions. So the Rambam tries to deal with it in that way. But here the Gemara, this is indicated in other places, suggests that she was a Fatoar. So now Hushai Arki is pressing David and said, why did you marry a Fatoar? Her children are Absalom and Tamar. Tamar gets in trouble with Amnon because Tamar is beautiful and Amnon, David's crown prince, his eldest child, lusts after her. And then you have the whole incident with Amnon and Tamar. Absalom, in revenge for his sister, kills Amnon. That's how we lost the crown prince. Absalom is also a beautiful individual. Likely, if they were both beautiful, because she was a foreign woman. And therefore, there was a mix between David HaMelech and a foreign woman, and the children were unusual in their beauty or in their appearance. And so Absalom is also described as a Yifat Toar. And here, he's asking, why did you marry this Yifat Toar who produced Absalom, who is rebelling against you? I'm like, Yifat Toar, Rachman HaShariah. Says the Torah says you're allowed to marry a fatora. I didn't do anything wrong. The Torah also has other parshiot that immediately come afterwards. The Gemara here skips one parsha. The first parsha is now that favor the younger child over the older child. And then the one after that is the Ben Sorer Umore. The Gemara sees a stage of smuchim, which is Yifat Toar is going to end up in a situation where you hate the woman. And then you're going to want to favor the child of the woman that you love versus the child of the woman that you hate. And then that woman that you hate is going to produce a child who's going to be then the next parsha, which is a Ben Sorer Umore. So that's what the Gemara sees here. Avshalom has a Ben Sorer Umore. Not that literally is a Ben Sorer Umore. Although if you look in the Tanchuma and Parsha Kiteitse, they break down Avshalom as this quintessential Ben Sorer Umore, because he is the rebellious child. But he is literally the rebellious child. He is not the rebellious child in the sense of the way the Gemara defines Ben Sorer Umore. But he's saying to him, had you never taken the Yifat Torah, you wouldn't have had a Ben Sorer Umore. Yeah, Yifat Torah is allowed, but the Torah also tells you what's going to be the end game of a Yifat Torah. You're going to have a Ben Sorer Umore. It's the derivative or the outcome or the natural progression that if you marry a Yifat Torah, you're going to have a Ben Sorer Umore. And in that sense, Hushai Arki basically implicates David HaMelech and says, listen, you married a Yifat Torah, that's why you have Avshalom. Don't say, oh, innocent David is being killed by Avshalom and now I need to justify it to the people and I have to worship Avodah Zarah so the people don't think about it. He says, you don't need that. Just tell him you married a Yifat Torah and you have a Ben Sorer Umore, and everybody, oh, okay, now I understand why he has a rebellious child. It can be justified, or people can understand why you have a rebellious child, having nothing to do with your sinning. It has to do with the fact that you took a Yifat Torah, which is permitted, but has repercussions. Others suggest that David was having doubts about Hashem's Hashkacha in the world. And everyone says he became Shlavot Avodah Zarah, was that he had thoughts of Kfirah. And that's what Hushai Arki over here straightens out and says, no. Don't think that there's no reason for this. There's no Ashkacha Pratit. There's good reason for this. You married a nation Yifat Torah, and that's why you have this problem on your hands. Alright, so now the Gemara continues these drashot with David HaMelech. Darash Amidu Stayed Amin Beri, Lamad David Domeh. David is similar to a Lesocher Kuti. Merchant that is a Kuti. Rashi over here describes him as somebody. Darko, if note, it's Chorato Ma'at Ma'at. He opens up his merchandise little by little. Valmidal Damim Mulatim. To make it look like it is low priced. Meaning that he only shows you a piece of the puzzle. So you think it's cheap. He offers you basically a teaser. And says, ah, this is just this much. But then when you really get there, he says, well, I'm not selling that. It comes with the whole package and there's all this. So you entice the individual into buying more and more because upselling them because you entice them with the smaller item. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is that the Socher Kuti does real literal upselling. Which is, he offers these small items. And then after he sells a small item, he offers you something a little better. And after that, he offers you something a little better than that. So he tries to upgrade or have you upgrade. Gives you the bare bones or the no-frills version for the cheap price, but then he can upgrade you along the way. Or, the Socher Kuti is someone who just sells small items. He just keeps selling. That's the way he makes his money. He's not selling big items, he's just going one after the next. Or that he's an iterant salesperson, and when he goes to the house, he first asks for some water to drink. Then after they give him some water, he says that maybe you have something to eat. So again, it's a slow process by which a person digs themselves into a situation. Any of those descriptions will make sense now. Amar David b'nei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. David says to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam. Again, here in Tehillim. Shkiot mi yavin. Who can discern errors? A mistake. Or something that a person trips up on. David says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shkiot mi yavin. Who can discern errors? How can anybody make it through without making any errors? Amalei Shviki Lach. You are forgiven. The word Shviki can be familiar to you from Kol Nidre. It's one of the Lishonot that's used in Kol Nidre is Shviki, which is to be forgiven, to be erased. So over here too, it's used in that context, which is, you are forgiven. Uministarot Nakeni. From those hidden faults, Hashem, cleanse me. Shviki Lach. God says, you're forgiven. Also from those presumptuous sins, hold your servant back from. Shvigilach, I forgive you. Alim shaluibi, they should not have dominion over me. Azitam, and I should be blameless. Tololishto be rabonon, that the Rabbanan shouldn't speak about me. I mean that I should not be the paradigmatic example of something in the discussion of the Gemara or in the discussion of the Sugyot. And the Yad Ramah says that what it means is he doesn't want to be in the Mishnah that we brought at the beginning of the Perek amongst the kings that don't have Olam Haba. Shviki Lach, I forgive you. It's fine. You'll be forgiven. Gemara obviously sees this all in the context of Chet Bat Sheva, and David is slowly building up. He asked God in the first place for something small. Forgive all the errors. Then he asked for, okay, not just the errors, also take care of the ministarot, things that are hidden faults, but they might have a little more conscious violation. And then he says, oh, not only that, also the zedim, the things that I did bizadom, intentionally or presumptuously. And then, am ishum libi, they should have no control over me, azeitam, and I should be left blameless. So again, he's building up, and that's what it was in Socher Kuti before, which is he starts small, and then he keeps going and going and adding on things. So now he's up to the fact that he doesn't want to be the center of discussion in the Beit Midrash. God says, no problem. Vini keiti mi pesherav. And then you can make me innocent of great transgression. Obviously, over here, he's asking for the big thing. Shalo ikatev sirchoni. My sin should not be written. Or, in essence, he wants this parsha being erased from the Navi. Obviously, if it wasn't found in the Navi, nobody would know about the sin of David and Bathsheba. The only reason we know about it is because it's included in the Navi. Had it not been in the Navi, even if it happened, it would have basically been erased from history because we'd have no knowledge of that sin. So what David says to Kodesh Baruch Hu is, don't write it down. That would free me of that final problem, which is that nobody would know about this sin. Amar lo yefshar. God responds, that's impossible, because it's already written. Or in essence, history writes itself, and you can't erase history. Oma Yud, Shenatalti mi Sarai. Last week's Parsha, where Hashem renames Sarai to Sarah, by Abraham, he simply added in a letter. So no letter was taken out. By Sarah, he takes out the Yud and replaces it with the Hey. And there, when the little Yud that I took out of Sarai, Omeid Mitzoveach, standing and screaming, Kama Shanim, all these years, because he says, you took me out, put me back in the Torah. Achabai Yoshua v'saftilo. Until Yoshua showed up and Moshe added on the Yud to Yoshua's name. Shemar v'ikra Moshe l'hosheya binun Yehoshua. So the Yud finally found its place. Kol ha-parsha kula. An entire parsha that is already written. Al-chad kama v'kama. I can't just erase it. I can't find a home for all these letters. The Yud, it took me forever to find a home for it. Now you want me to erase the whole parsha? And find a home for all these letters? That I can't do. So that's the Viniketi Mipesharav. David was asking for forgiveness, but not only forgiveness, he wanted it to be erased. And God says, I can't erase it. And that has to do with the fundamental problem, we discussed this before, of tshuva. Because what we're asking for God to do when we do tshuva is basically erase history. And that's what David's saying. I did tshuva. I want history erased. I want you to take back history. But that's a practical impossibility. What's happened has happened. What's written is written. You can't erase it. And so that leads to the theological problem, which is, how does tshuva work? Or how can the Gemara say that zdonot nasot zchuyot, that things that are sins, that were intentional and conscious sins, how can they be turned into zchuyot, into merits? You can't erase what happened. And so David's asking the same thing from Hashem, and Hashem's saying, I can't erase what has happened. Again, we spoke about this earlier in the Perek, about the answers that are given as to how to explain how tshuva works and how it's possible to rework a sin to be something positive when you take a negative history and bring it into a positive, constructive manner. If you take a lesson from it, you learn something from it, what was otherwise viewed as negative in the past, now you shed a positive perspective or prism on it because the mistake made you better. The mistake, you did something with it that was constructive in nature that now changed your life. And now it was still the same sin, but the sin is not bad because it did good for you. And that's the way to deal with it. Now, where it says, Niketi mipesherav, Amar lefanav, Ribono shalom, but David says to God, Melcholi al altovon kulo, forgive me entirely for that sin with Bathsheba. Amar, kvaratit, Shlomo bin chalomar bechachmato, Shlomo in the future is going to say in his wisdom, Hayachte ish, esh bicheko. Can a person stoke a fire in his chest or in his bosom? Ubigadav lo tisarachna. And his clothing will not be burnt or singed. When you play with fire, Right? Obviously something happens, especially when you do it so close. And imayalech ish al gechalim, if a man walks on coals, viraglav lo tikavena, his feet will not be burnt. Cain, habal eshet re'ehu, someone who consorts with his friend's wife as an adulterous affair, eloi nakeh kol nakeh haba. Anybody who touches her will not be cleansed completely. You can't be involved with something like this and walk away totally clean. And that seems to indicate, even if one does tshuva, there's still a stain, there's still some sort of tumah that's residual from the sin that was done. You can't just walk away and say as if nothing happened. I'm like, kohachi nitrat hau gabra? David responds to Hashem, what, so now I'm just lost? There's no way for me to get out of this? I'm going to be burdened with this for the rest of my life? I'm like, kabel alecha yisurim. Take on yisurim in order to rectify. This is a concept that the Rishonim speak about, the people atoning for sins that they have done through the acceptance of yisurim, through self-flagellation, which is a way to somehow bring kapara without God punishing you because you punish yourself or you take on yisurim. Kibel alav. That's what David does. He accepts yisurim. Meiram Rav. Shisha chodeshim nitzara David. The yisurim that he accepted, or what happened to was that he became a mitzora for 6 months. Nistalkai men shchina, and the shchina leaves him because a mitzora is someone who's tamei, and therefore the shchina is not shore on them. Ve pirshumi menu sanhedrin. Sanhedrin distanced themselves from him. That might be because they felt that there was something wrong over here, or because naturally the mitzora is sent out of the machane. He's badad yeshev. He has to sit alone away. So he was separated from the Sanhedrin just because he is a mitzora. Now the Gemara explains, how do we know that all these things happen? Nitztara, how do we know that he had tzara? Tichtiv. In that same Perek Tehilim that deals with Batsheva, it says, Tichat'eni be'ezov. Purify me, purge me with the hyssop, v'tar, and I will be cleansed or purified. Tichabseni, you should wash me, clean me, umisheleg albin. And then I will be whiter than snow. The fact that he says, Tichat eni be'exov, purify me or purge me with the hyssop, sounds like he needed the hyssop to become tahor. And that is the process of tarata mitzora. Nistalkai menu shchina, how do we know the shchina left him? Tichtiv, hashivali sisoni shechab. Again, in that same parak in Tehilim, it says, return to me or restore to me the joy of your salvation. Ve'ruach nidiva. And the willing spirit, tismecheni, should uphold me or support me. So there you see the ruach, nidiva, the spirit of Hashem. David is asking for it to be returned. Seemingly it was lost because of the Chet of Batsheva, and this is found, these are the psukim. And the Chet of Batsheva asking for Hashem to return him to his former state. Pershami menu sanhedrin, sanhedrin left him, dichtiv, yeshuvu li yireecha. Turn to me, yireecha, those that fear you. And so again, he's asking for them to be returned to him, or those that yireecha, which are the Sanhedrin, they should return to me, or they should turn to me. They should re-engage with me. Shisha chodoshim minalan. How do you know that he was a mitzora for 6 months? We proved maybe that he was a mitzora from the fact that he needed tarata mitzora. But how do you know how long? What was the duration of the tarat? Diftiv, the psukim say, V'yamim Hashem alach David al Yisrael arbeim shana. The years that David ruled, his duration of his reign was 40 years. V'chebron malach sheva shanim. In Chebron he ruled for 7 years. U'b'Yerushalayim malach shloshim v'shalosh shanim. In Yerushalayim he was the king for 33 years. Meaning in Chebron he was the king of Yehuda. In Yerushalayim he was the king of all of Klal Yisrael. Uchtiv, the problem is, earlier in Shmuel Bet it says, before he comes in a sense to Yerushalayim, to become the king over all of Klal Yisrael, it says, V'chebron malach al Yehuda sheva shanim v'shisha chodoshim. It says that he ruled in Chebron 7 years and 6 months. So the pasuk that gives the summary of his reign at 40 years says it was made up of 7 years in Hebron, 33 in Yerushalayim. But the pasuk that discusses his leaving Hebron says that he ruled in Hebron for 7.5 years. Where did they disappear, those 6 months? Must be the 6 months disappeared because he was a mitzora. Either because badad yeshiv mechutz l'machaneh, he's left out alone, or we say later on in Navi, Uzziyahu, who becomes a mitzora, is basically deposed from the throne, and his son takes over. Now, even though he's still alive, and there the Gemara speaks about the fact that his son gave tremendous kavod to his father and only did everything in the name of his father when he took over. But nevertheless, you see that when a person was a mitzora, that put them outside of society. And for a king, that meant that he was no longer the king. So the Gemara says, how do you reconcile the loss of those 6 months? Well, it must have been that he was at mitzora for 6 months, and that would explain why they're not counted. So even though his reign was for 40 years and 6 months, there was a 6 month hiatus in the middle where he was technically not the king because he was a mitzora. Obviously, the difficulty with this is that the 7 years or the 7.5 years of Chevron are way before the chait of Batsheva. So what you have to say is that the psukim are indicating not that the pasuk itself is telling you that the 6 months happened in Chevron necessarily. It's just telling you that there were 6 months more to his reign, and they were not incorporated, they're not captured in the story of the summary of his reign, because there was a 6 month period where his reign was not considered to be a part of his years of ruling over Bnei Yisrael. Though some say it's because of the covenant of Yerushalayim that they put extra years into Yerushalayim, even though that wasn't the case. But the 6 months were really missing from there, but once they took them and gave them to Yerushalayim, they had to take them away from Hebron. So he says again, you see David is over and over again is beseeching Hashem to forgive him for the sin. So he says to God, please forgive me for the sin. Mekolach. He says, you are forgiven. Asei mi ot l'tova. Make a sign for me. Viru sonai ve'yavoshu. Then my adversaries will see it, and they will be ashamed or embarrassed. Get Hashem azartani v'nichamtani. Because you, God, have helped me and consoled me or forgiven me. So what David HaMelech wants is not only to be forgiven, but to make it clear that God has forgiven him. And that way, his enemies, or those that believe that he should have been deposed, mean that all the troubles of David start after Chet Batsheva, and it's possible that many of them are a derivative of Chet Batsheva. The Tana Navi already predicts that from his household he's going to have problems that are going to arise. And he has Amnon, Avshalom, Adoniah. He has plenty of problems from within his household. But there are also people who are maybe disenchanted or who start to rebel against David HaMelech. And he wants them to be put in place. And God has forgiven him for the sin. During your lifetime, you will not have that pleasure to see that. But in the lifetime of your son Shlomo, we will see that. Shlomo built the Beit Hamikdash, b'keish l'chnis aron the Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. He wanted to bring in the aron into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. This Gemara is also found in Bamei Malikim in the Gemara in Shabbat. Again, a similar story, more extensive over there. Davku sharim zebezeh. The gates stuck together and would not let him enter. Amar esrim v'arba renanot. He said over 24 renanot, v'lo ne'aneh, and he was not answered. Rashi over here says, chavdal renanot, ar ben tfilah tchina v'rina. All these different languages that indicate a tefillah, he used all these different languages. The Yad Ramah takes a more narrow approach and says, there are 24 Pirkei Tehillim that begin with a Lashon of Tchina or Tzaka, and that's what's being referenced to over here. As Rashi thinks it references to the 24 different types of tefillah or beseechings of Hashem. Amar Se'ushi Arim Rasheichem, Beinaschu Pitchei Olam. Doorways or gateways raise up and open up the way, and let the honorable king come through. Mize melech hakavod. Who is the honorable king? Hashem Izuz v'gibor, Hashem gibor milchama. It's a great and mighty God that wants to come through. V'namar, su sharim rasheichem, usu pitchei olam. Again, the gate should open and reveal the entrance to the world. V'yavo melech hakavod. And the honorable king should enter. And again, Mihuze Melech HaKavod, Hashem Hu Tzvakot, Melech HaKavod Selah. V'lo ne'aneh. Doesn't work. Kivan Shamar, Hashem Elukim, Al Teshev Pnei Mishechecha. This is in Shlomo's speech when he's consecrating the Beit HaMikdash. It says, Hashem Elukim, Al Teshev Pnei Mishechecha. Do not turn back the face or the pleas of your anointed one. Zachra lechazdei David avdecha. Remember the great kindness, righteousness of your servant David. Miyad nene. Right away, gates open. Boto sha'a nefchu pnei sonei David kishulei agdera. Those that hated David, here it's literally not a euphemistic side, but those that hated David, their faces turned black like the bottoms of a pot. Pot that is put on an open fire turns black, turns ashen. So too, their faces turned ashen when they saw that the only reason the gates open is because of David HaMelech. Yadu kol Yisrael shemachal lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'oto avon. From there you see that it was clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had forgiven him for the sin, because only in his merit did the Shekhinah, or the Aron, enter into the Beit Kodshei HaKadoshim. Keichazi. So we just dealt with the Arba Hetiotot, who were not getting Olam Haba. We dealt with Bilam, and we dealt with Doeg, and we dealt with Achitofel. Now we're up to Geichazi, who's the last of the four Hetiotot. Geichazi, who is the Misharet of Elisha, is Elisha's right-hand man. But there it says he does not get Olam Haba. How do you know? Dichtiv. Vayelech Elisha Damesek. Elisha went to Damesek. Vayechan Azal. Where did he go? So the first thing is, Elisha never was Vayelech Damesek. There is no such pasuk. There's nothing in the Navi that says that. Lashon HaMikra is Vayavo Elisha Damesek. That he went there. So either you have to say that the Gemara is quoting the pasuk in the vein of what it meant, which is, if Elisha appeared in Damesek, then obviously he went to Damesek. So they're just quoting the pasuk as, in order to get there, it's Vayelech. So that's how they write it. Or, that might be the essence of the question. It says, Vayavo Elisha Damesek, that he's in Damesek, then where is Vayelech Elisha? Why was he going to a Damesek? He showed up in Damesek, why was he going there? That might be the nature of the question. The truth is that he goes there in order to fulfill a nevuah that was given to Eliyahu and Navi in the cave, when Hashem passes by him, when he has the simulated Har Sinai effect over there. One of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Eliyahu, a number of things that are going to happen, there are three things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says over there, that he's going to anoint Yehu as the king and wipe out Beit Achav. He's going to anoint Hazael as the king of Aram, and that he's going to anoint Elisha as his protege and the Talmid. The only one of which he does is Elisha. Elisha's student does the other two. The reason Elisha's in Damesek is because he has to carry out what Eliyahu hadn't done, which is to anoint the new king of Aram. But the question of the Gemara might be that we understand why he's in Damesek, but why did he go there in the first place? He went to bring Gehazi back with tshuva, and he refused to come. Amalo chazor b'cha, says, do tshuva. Amalo kach mikublani mimcha, says, I have a misor from you, Elisha, chuteu machti et arabim, someone who sins and causes others to sin. Ein maspikim yado laso tshuva. That person does not have the capacity to do tshuva. Now, the Rambam, when he quotes this, and other Rishonim, when they quote this, don't say that it's impossible to do tshuva. It says here, ein maspikim yado. It is very hard for him to do tshuva, meaning the min hashamayim, they don't help him to do tshuva. So there is a possibility of doing tshuva, but it is a long and arduous path. Part of the problem, which the Gemara notes in other places, and the Rambam notes as well, is that if he was choteh umachteh et harabim, that if he does tshuva, we don't want it to be that he ends up in Gan Eden, and his students end up in Gehinom. Because his students, who he was machteh, are choteim, and end up in Gehinom. He who does tshuva now ends up in Gan Eden. So he's not only responsible for himself, he's responsible for those others as well. And that's the difficulty in doing tshuva, which is, he's got not only to rectify what he did, he's got to rectify all the problems that he caused, the derivatives of his actions. Mayavad, what did he do wrong? Igadamri, Evan Shoevet Tala, the Chatat Yiravam. That he put a magnetic stone by the Agalim of Yiravam. Bemida Ben Shemayim Laretz, and that suspended the Egel between the heavens and earth, so it made it look like the eagle had power to it, because he put in this magnetic stone that held it up. Vigadamre, Shem Chakak Befia, that he etched out or carved out the Shem Hashem in the mouth of the eagle, by Tamach Rezet, and then when people came there, it used to announce the eagle, Vomeret, Anochi, Velo Yelecha, implying, not that those were the violations of someone who worshipped the eagle, rather, the eagle was saying, I am your God, that took you out of Mitzrayim, and you can't have any other gods. So again, it gave it a semblance of reality or power that made people think that the Egalim were really gods. Vigadamre, Rabbanan Dacha Mikameh, that he pushed away the Rabbanan from Elisha, that he stopped the Rabbanan or the other Nevi'im from learning. Shnemar, Vayimru B'nei HaNevi'im El Elisha, But Elisha visits one of his schools of Nevi'im. The Nevi'im say to Elisha, the place that we're living in now, the place where we've taken up quarters, is very narrow, or it's tight space. It's implying that until that point in time, it was not tzar. Implications from that are that until that point in time, it wasn't so difficult. That Gehazi had pushed away the Rabbanon who wanted to come and learn by Elisha, so there were a limited number of people and the place was sufficient. Now that Gehazi was taken out of the picture, all of a sudden there were new people that entered and they needed more space. And that's what it's saying now. All of a sudden the space is not sufficient for us. Implying until now it was sufficient, but now it's not. New people have come in because they got rid of Gehazi, and that Gehazi was the problem from beforehand. Similar in nature to the story in the Gemara in Brachot, story of Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Gamliel would only let in people Shetocham Kiburam when they were really great students and they were pure. Whereas after they deposed him because of the altercations of Rabbi Yoshua, then they opened up the doors to the Beit Midrash and Hosifu Safsaleim. They had to add in benches because so many people came at that time. So at that time he had limited the students that came. As soon as they let everybody in, they had to add benches to the Beit Midrash. Similar over here, Gehazi had limited the students until that point in time. Once he was gone, then they had more people here, and the place was too small or too narrow for them. And so that's why they're coming and beseeching Elisha to give them more space or to have more room for the students. Tarabanan, lolam tehei smol duche v'yamin mikarevet. That a person also always should have, when they are chastising somebody, rebuking someone, or dealing with someone, they should push away with their left hand and bring closer with their right hand. The idea being that the right hand is stronger than the left hand, and that means that the pull inwards is stronger than the push outwards. That the person should try to keep a relationship and a bond with the individual, and that bond and relationship should be stronger than the negative feedback or the constructive criticism that's being given. Loke Elisha, not similar to Elisha, should dachafolo Gehazi b'shtei yadayim. They pushed away Elisha with both of his hands. And also, here it's added in the Gerson, I'll discuss this in a little bit, Loke Yeshua ben Prachya, another like Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, should dachafolo Yeshua notzrim b'shtei yadav. Who pushed away Yeshua with both of his hands. Gehazi, how do we know that that was the case? Tichtiv, a young girl who was taken captive from the Jews. Again, Aram has these little sorties that go into Israel and cause them a lot of trouble and a lot of pain. And one of those sorties, they took a girl into captivity. It happens to be that that young girl was put in place to work for Eshet Naaman. And that's how she then tells Eshet Naaman that Naaman should go to Eretz Yisrael, to the Navi, and get cured over there. And Naaman asks permission from the king to take leave and go get cured in Eretz Yisrael. And the king sends him with great rewards for the Navi. And then it says, after he's cured, Vayashav Elisha Elokim, Hu v'kol machaneo v'yavo v'yamod l'fanav, v'yamer m'hinein ha'yadati, ki ein Elokim b'chol aretz kim b'Yisrael. V'takachna bracha meid abadecha, take this gift, v'yomer chay Hashem asher mat l'fanav v'yimakach. Elisha takes a shvua that he won't take it, v'yitzar bo l'kachat v'yimain. He presses him to take it and he refuses. The reason likely that he does not want to take payment from Naaman is that if he takes payment from Naaman, Naaman will think that he's discharged his obligation. He came here, he dips in the Yarden, comes out and says, I know who the true God is now, and I know where the chosen land is. Because a lot of his skepticism, we'll see in a second, was, I've dipped in all the rivers up in Aram, and they're much better than the Yarden, and it did nothing for me. Why should I go down to the Yarden and dip in that river? What's it going to do for me? Comes down, dips in the river, and he's cured from his surat. After that, he makes a declaration that he says, the true God, or the only God, is the God of Israel. And obviously, the land of Israel is unique. Elisha wants him to go back. He's the Tsar Tzava of Aram. And Aram is causing great difficulty for the northern kingdom for Israel. And in this way, Elisha gets a sympathetic voice up in Aram, who's basically not going to come back and bother the Jews and do negative things towards the Jews. So he wants that to be what Naaman owes him. Basically, Naaman owes him the obligation to recognize God and serve God. And Naaman even says that when I go back up to Aram, I'm going to have to bow down with the king because he leans on me before the Avodah Zarah. But no, my heart's not into it. I really believe in God now. If he took payment from Naaman, Naaman would feel no obligation towards him to serve God or any obligation to carry out what Elisha wants from him. If he pays him, he says, I paid for my services, I'm done. So Elisha refuses to take payment. So then, Gehazi hatches a plan in his head. Elisha's stopping us from getting what Naaman brought for us. I'm going to take a shua and I'm going to go take something for him. I'm going to chase him down. Naaman seems to be approaching, jumps off his chariot to greet him. I had sudden guests that arrived in the Nevi'im. Just give us a little block of silver, a talent of silver, and two changes of clothing. What do you mean? One talent of silver? Take two talents of silver. Vayifratzbo. He urged him on. He pressed him to do it. Vayatzar kikrayim kesef. And so therefore he tied up two blocks of silver. Vishnei charitim. Vishnei chalifot bigadim. And then two changes of clothes. Vayitenu shnei nerav. Vayisu lefanav. And gave it to his servants and they carried it before Gehazi to return. Vayavoy lofel. Vayikach miadam. He came up to the hill and he took it from them. Vayifko babayit. He put him in his house. And then he let them go. He sent them back to Naaman. And now Gehazi shows back up in front of Elisha. Elisha says to him, where are you coming from, Gehazi? I didn't go anywhere. I never was anywhere. My heart did not go with you when somebody disembarked from their chariot in order to greet you. Hey, lakachat the kesef, lakachat bigadim, that you took the money, the clothing, vizeitim ukramim mitzonu vakar vavadav shmachot, money, clothing, olives, grapes, flocks, cattle, servants and maidservants. And then he curses him, mitzarat naman tibak b'chav zarachah leolam, v'yitzim lefanav mitzora kashaleg. Mar says, mishakel kulei hai, did he really take that much? He didn't take all those items. He says, Kesef Gademu de Shakav. He just asked for a little bit of money and some clothing, and that's what he ended up taking. Amar Rav Yitzchak Votosha, Haya Elisha Yoshev, Vidoresh Bishmona Shvatzim. Elisha was teaching the parak of Shmona Shvatzim, and Gehazi, his student, was there learning. Naaman Tsar Tzava Melech Aram Haya. Naaman was the general of the army of Aram, but Mitzora, he was suffering from leprosy. Amrale Hayir Vita, Tishtabai Me'ara Yisrael. A young girl who was taken captive from the Jews, that young girl, when she sees Naaman with his tzarat, says to him, Yazal to Gabi Elisha, Masilaka, that if you go to Elisha, he will cure you. Again, this is found in the Psukim, not in this language, but similar idea in the Psukim, Kiato. When he comes to Elisha, Amrale Zil Tmobi Yardain. Go dip in the Yardain. I'm like, Achuke kame chayach me? What, are you making fun of me? This is a big joke? Amri le hanu dabu bade. The people who accompanied him said, my nafkala amino. What do you have to lose? Zil nesei. Give it a shot. If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, you're no worse off than you were before. Ozal batavo bi yardana. He went ahead and dipped into the yardain. Vitase. And he was cured of his tzarat. Ata aitele kohane. Denukit. So then he went to bring all the things that he had brought along with him and give them to Elisha. Lotzave the kabule mine. He did not listen and was refused to accept the gifts from Naaman. So again, that's what we explained before, that Elisha refused to accept any payment. The reason being that he wants Naaman to be obligated to him and to God and not think that he can discharge his obligation by paying it off. Gehazi iftar mikamei, Elisha. Gehazi takes leave of Elisha at that point. Azal Shaka. He went and took, meaning that he chased after Naaman, Gehazi, in order to get the money and to get the clothing. May the Shaka, the Afki. And what he took, he deposited in his house, back in his tent. Kiato. Then he returned back to his position as being the Talmid of Elisha. When he returned, Chazi Elisha, the Tzarat, Tavaparcha Ilave Reshe. But Elisha already saw that tzarat was starting to break out on his face. Amalei Rasha, came your time to take the reward for Shmona Shvatzim. And that goes back to what we saw before, that Elisha implicates him with taking eight things. Why does he implicate him with taking eight things? So the Gemara says, a Gehazi jumped the gun to take reward for Shmona Shvatzim. Eight things for the eight Shmona Shvatzim, the eight Shvatzim that are mentioned in that parak. And so he came to take his reward. And that's why there were eight items, even though he only took money and clothing. Nevertheless, he enumerates all those items. Bitzarat, Naman, Tibak, Bechav, Zaracha, Ad Olam. And then Elisha curses Gehazi with a tzarat of Naaman, that it should be upon him and his children forever. And then he leaves or takes leave of Elisha covered in tzarat. And in essence, the curse of Elisha comes true and Gehazi is plagued by the same tzarat that Naaman just shed when he came to Eretz Yisrael. And even though there's no literal dichifa or pushing away of Gehazi here by Elisha, but by the mere fact that he made him into a mitzora, is a dechipa, because he is v'yeshev badad mechutz l'machaneh. And that really pushed him away. Then, v'arba'a anashim ayu mitzoraim, petach hashar, is a subsequent parak in Melachim. And over there it says that there were four men who were mitzoraim, they were outside the city, by the gateway, because they weren't allowed into the city. And that is when Aram is laying siege to the capital city of the northern kingdom, and they are in desperate straits, and then Hashem performs a miracle, and the entire army flees, and these four Mitzorayim basically give up hope and say, either we're going to starve to death, or we're going to throw ourselves to the army. So they go over there and throw themselves to the army, but there's nobody there, because God chased them all away. And they start then to take everything and pack everything away, and then they go, wait a minute, we can't do this, this is not right. Yom Besorahu. This is a day of celebration, a day of news. We got to tell the people in the city. So they send message over the wall to the people in the city, and then they check them out if they're really lying or if it's a trap. And sure enough, they go out and they find all this booty, all this stuff left by the army, and they're able to break the siege and then feast upon everything that's there, which they've been starving for over the last number of years while it was laying under siege. So that story is actually the Aftora for Parshat Mitzora. Over there it explains in the beginning that there were four men who were Mitzoraim outside the city. And Amar Rav Yochanan Gehazi Ushlosha Banav. That was Gehazi and his three children. And the punishment of Elisha towards Gehazi is the story that we find later on with the Arba'a Anashim Mitzoraim. Those four Mitzoraim are Gehazi and his three children. The punishment that Elisha had met out for him, Yochanan in other places suggests that Gehazi did tshuva and then came back. And again, there's nothing in the Psukim that indicates that. It might be that if you leave like Rabbi Yochanan, that he does tshuva because over there, when he has the ability to take all the spoils of war that were left behind by the army, instead of doing that, he informs the people in the city, and that was the tshuva. Over here, he took money from Naaman when he wasn't supposed to for his own selfish benefit. Over here, they become selfless, which is they start to take it for themselves and realize that's not the right thing to do. We need to go and tell the people, and that might have been the tshuva that he does. And again, we spoke earlier in the parak that then shows up the next parak standing in front of the king, Gehazi, telling stories of Elisha. If he was a Mitzora, he wouldn't be standing in front of the king. All right. As you can see here, there's a large blank space at the bottom of the daf. That's usually indicative of the fact that the daf was much longer, because you know, as you can see in every other daf here in Perek HaChelek, they go from top to bottom and they're filled out. That means that the censor got to this Gemara, and there was a missing piece of Gemara, which I'll read to you now. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, Mayu. It says that by Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, what's the story? Kikadlinu Yanai Malka, the Rabbanan. When Yanai Amelech killed out all the Rabbanan, it's a story that we find in the Gemara Kiddushin. Azal Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, v'yeshu le'Alexandria shel Mitzrayim. Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya and Yeshu escape to Alexandria of Mitzrayim to escape Yanai, so they won't kill him. The only one of the Chachamim that stays back is Shimon ben Shetach, because Shimon Shetach's sister is married to Yanai Melech. He's the brother-in-law of the king. So he's spared. Kiaba Shalmo, when things settled down and Yanai Melech wasn't angry at the Rabbanan anymore, and he was ready to call them back, Shalach le Shimon Shetach, Minei Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh, Shimon Shetach sends a message down to Rabbi Shua ben Prachya in Alexandria of Mitzrayim, greetings from the holy city of Yerushalayim, Lechi Alexandria Shel Mitzrayim, to you, Alexandria of Mitzrayim, Achoti Balui Sharui Bitochech. My sister, my husband, live amongst you. Vanochi Yoshevet Shomeima. And I now am left desolate. And that the message that he's sending to them is, things are okay, but Yerushalayim still remains a desolate city, which is that Yerushalayim doesn't have inhabitants because the Rabbanon who ran away didn't come back. Come ato. So he understood the message, and he leaves to come back to Yerushalayim. On the way, they stopped off at a bed and breakfast. They had some hostess that took care of them. Avdulei Yikara Tuva. They treated them like royalty. This hostess was terrific. Amar Kama Yafeh Aksan Yozo. And so Rabbi Yeshua ben Barachya comments about the great service and this hostess, how wonderful she is. Amalei Rabbi Eneha Trutot. Yeshu responds to his Rabbi Yeshua ben Barachya, what are you talking about? You're saying this woman is so beautiful and so great? Her eyes are trutot, which usually means like narrow or slits. They're misshaped. They're not circular in nature. They're misshaped. In essence, he was saying she's ugly. I'm like, Rasha? That's what you're engaged in? The way that Rabbi Yeshua ben Barachya was speaking about the woman, he wasn't speaking about her physical beauty. He wasn't looking at the woman. He was speaking about the service and how they treated them. On the other hand, Yeshu responds and says something about the woman's physical beauty, which means that he's looking at the woman's physical beauty, staring at the woman, and here Rabbi Yeshua ben Barachya is saying something and he responds negatively to it because he was looking at the wrong thing. Afik Arba Meir Shipurei, he took out 400 shofarot, Vishamte, and excommunicated him. And whenever the Gemara uses the term 300 or 400, it's an exaggeration, it just means many times, but he basically blew the shofar to indicate that he was being excommunicated. It was a sound of milchama, the shofar. Now here it's a milchama, not a war with an enemy, but a war in the sense that this person's being pushed out of society. You're excommunicating him. So ata the kamei kama zimnin, Yeshu approached Rabbi Yeshua ben Barachya numerous times. Amalei kablan. He says, accept me. I want to come back. Lo ava kamashkach be. He refused. He didn't listen to him. He did not accept him. Yom ha'had ava kakari kriyat shema. One day Rabbi Yeshua ben Barachya was reading kriyat shema. After the Kamei, Yeshu approached him on that day, Savar the Kibule. He said, finally, he thought about, yeah, you know what, it's time to accept him, to accept his tshuva and to take him back. Achvelele biyadei, he waved to him with his hand, Hu Savar mitcha dachile. Yeshu interpreted the wave of the hand to get away. No, it's no different than any other time. Really, he meant, wait a second, hold on. Azal zakaf the vinta, put up a brick, vishtachabela, and he bowed down to it. Amalei hadar b'chaz. Then Rabbi Yeshua ben Barachya chased after him and says, do tshuva, come back. Amalei kach mikumlani mimcha. This is the misora that I have from you. Kolachuteh machti et rabim. Anybody who sins and causes others to sin, eimas mikimi yado laso tshuva. They don't give him the capacity to do tshuva. V'amamar, and now we have the commentary on that. Yeshua notzri, Yeshua the Nazarene, which also now was turned into the word Notzri in the modern Hebrew to mean a Christian, because they come from Yeshua Notzri, they derive from Nazareth. Kishef, Beisit, Beidiach et Israel. He was engaged in sorcery, witchcraft, and he caused Bnei Israel, the public at large of Jews, to leave the path of Judaism. That's what it means, Choteh Umachti et Rabim, that he led them astray, and that's what he says, I can't come back. In that way, his story is identical to that of Gehazi. Details of the story are very similar. And so the Gemara, as an example of you shouldn't do what Elisha did to Gehazi, and you shouldn't do what Rabbi Yeshua ben Barachya did to Yeshu. In both those cases, they pushed them away too hard. By pushing them away too hard, it led them to go do something worse. And then when they did something worse, they refused to come back and do tshuva. And so their rebuking, or the way they dealt with their Talmidim, was inappropriate and led to inappropriate results. And in both cases, they were pushed away because of their behavior, something wrong that they did. When they were pushed away, they go and worship a Avodah Zarah, do something that's detrimental, not only to themselves, but others, so they're Choteh Umachti et Rabim. And then the master, whether it's Elisha or Rabbi Yeshua ben Barachya, wants them to come back, Chashot Du Tshuva, and say, we have a Mesorah that there's no tshuva for Achoteh Umachti et Rabim. And so they ended both in the same manner, in the same fashion. Right now, back to the Gemara. Tanya, Amar Shimon Lazar, Yetzer, Tinok, Visha. These items are individuals. Tei Smol Duchev, Yamin Mikarevet. The left hand should push away, and the right hand should bring them close. Yetzer, again, the desires of an individual. If you push them away completely, it won't work. You have to do it in a manner where you satisfy yourself a little bit, but you don't completely satisfy yourself. So as if people go on diets, they go on a starvation diet, it never works because you can't totally eliminate food and then be fine. You end up gorging afterwards because you're starving. What you have to do is you have to give yourself small amounts of food, satisfy yourself, but not eat too much. That's the idea of the Yetzer in all areas. You have to satisfy it a little bit, but not give in totally to it, and that's what it means. You mekarev b'yamin and docheh b'smol. By tinok and isha, Rashi says, datan kala. They are not so sophisticated, and therefore if you push them away, you're going to go flying in the other direction. They need to be handled with gentle hands, with kid gloves, because when you chastise them or you give them constructive criticism, it has to be couched in the love and in the way that it doesn't totally push them away. So now, he is saying this about a Yetzer Tinok and Isha. The Gemara before said it about even a Talmid, even a student, or even a child, or any time you engage in this type of rebuke or constructive criticism, it has to be done in a way where there's a counter pressure or counter force that is bringing the person closer at the same time. Tarbanan, Kimel Chalaim Chala Elisha. That Elisha fell ill three times. Echad Shigirat Dovim Mitinokot. One of them is a punishment for the fact that in the beginning of his reign as the Navi, he comes across Yericho and they start making fun of him and calling him Baldy Baldy. And he gets upset at them. And therefore, their bears come in and eat up all the children of Yericho. So over there, the Sukkim do not seem to indicate that he did anything wrong. But over here, the Gemara says that because he did that, he fell ill. The second thing is that he pushed Gehazi away with both hands, which we saw before the Gemara viewed negatively. So he fell ill over that. I mean that he was punished and fell ill. And one sickness by which he died. The pasuk is that he fell ill with the sickness that he was to die from. So that makes it sound like that was not the only time that he fell ill, but he had fallen ill before, but this was the illness that he was going to die from. That's one way to do it. Or the other way that people read it is that the word chole appears in the pasuk. So chala is one, cholyo is two. So that's three altogether. Sheyamutbo. So cholyo, sheyamutbo was the final one, but there were two other sicknesses besides that. Now the Gemara explains this again. This is something we saw before in Bava Metzia, which is Ad Avraham Loya Zikna. Till Avraham, people did not age. Called it Chazid Avraham Amar HaYitzchak. Anybody saw Avraham thought it was Yitzchak. Yitzchak and Avraham looked very similar, all alike. And since Avraham never aged, they would confuse Avraham and Yitzchak. Called the Chazid Yitzchak. Anybody saw Yitzchak Amar Hay Avraham. So Bar Avraham Rachme. Avram Davind, Havile Zikna, that people should age so that there be a distinction between the father and the child, or the mother and the daughter. Shnemar, Avraham Zakein Baba Yamim, that Avraham got older. So the fact that this is the first time that we hear in the Torah that somebody got old, what the Gemara says is, that's where it started. People weren't getting old before that. Avraham was the first one to get old. Why? And here's the background story to that. Ad Yaakov Lovei Chusha. Before Yaakov, people did not get sick or weaken before they die. Barachmei, Babi Chosha. Yaakov davens for that there should be such a thing. Shnemar, Yom Yosef, Hinei Avicha Chole. So again, here you have the first time someone is sick in the Torah is Yaakov Avinu. So the Gemara sees in that Yaakov must have been the first person to fall ill. Because a person didn't know when he was going to die. If a person was healthy to the last day and then just dropped dead, then there was no way to know when a person reached their end. And then he couldn't prepare for death. And his children also, they couldn't prepare the affairs of the estate. So then Yaakov davens that they should fall ill so that people have time to arrange their matters to deal with these things. So there is a process by which a person deteriorates and then will know that it's time to take care of these issues. Ad Elisha lo avinish chalish demitbach. Until the time of Elisha, anybody who fell ill passed away from that illness. That's what Yaakov davened for. That person, before they passed away, would fall ill, and that would be it. Until Elisha, where Elisha got sick, and then recovered. Va'ate Elisha by Rachme. Elisha davens to Hashem, and asked for Rachme, mi'itbach. And he is healed. Shnemar, Elisha chala et kol yo asher yamut bo. That Elisha fell ill with the sickness that he would die from, implying that he had other sicknesses that he did not die from. And again, that's the first time we find that someone falls ill, and then recovers from that illness. And so the Gemara gives the background to that Elisha wanted people to have the opportunity to do tshuva. It shouldn't be that they just fall ill and then they're going to die. They should fall ill to indicate to them that there's an opportunity to do tshuva, and they should be able to recover from that illness, because Hashem gives them the opportunity, if they do tshuva and they have rachamim on them, that they can continue on with their life. We'll do the Mishnah. The Mishnah, we'll go quickly, and then we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. Dor HaMabul, Ein Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba. Dor HaMabul does not have rights to Olam Haba, Ve'ein Omdim B'Din. And they don't have a right to be Omid B'Din, Latid Lavo, which is that Hashem will not bring them back in order to be judged. So something that you might have thought of as being negative, which is Omdim L'Din in the future, here the Mishnah indicates that that's something positive. That even the Rishayim, if they're brought back and their Neshama and their Guf are put back together for a Din in the future, that gives them either a second chance at things being rectified or things going better. Or it's something that's an opportunity that they'll be brought back to life. If you say that they will not have a Din Latid Lavo, that means that they are completely gone. There's no chance at all, or there's no returning at all. Shneamar, Pasuk says, in the end of Parshat Bereishit, Lo Yadun Ruchi Be'Adam Le'olam. So here the Gemara learns, Lo Din Ve'Lo Ruach. Neither one of those will take place. Lo Din means they will not have Din, which is that they're Enum Din B'Din Latid Lavo. Lo Ruach, Rashi says, is that they won't be floating around with Tzaddikim in Olam Haba. They won't have that spirit that they, Nishmato, Tzura B'Tzura Chaim, they won't have that experience. Dora Pilaga, Ein Lehem Chedek L'Olam Haba. They don't have a portion of Olam Haba. Shneamar, Pasuk says, Vayafetz Hashem Odam Yisham Opnei Kol Aretz, Vayachtolu Livnot Eir, Al Ken Grash Ma Bavel, Kisham Balal Hashem Sfat Kol Aretz, Umisham Hefitzam Hashem Opnei Kol Aretz. Vayafetz Hashem Odam Yisham is the first disbursement, which is the loss of Olam Hazeh. And then at the end, when it says, Umisham Hefitzam Hashem Opnei Kol Aretz, that's the second disbursement, which is their loss of Olam Haba as well. Anshei Sdom Ein Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba. Anshei Sdom don't have a place in Olam Haba. Shneur, we just read in last week's parsha. Anshei Sdom, Ra'im V'chadim L'Hashem Ol. They were evil and sinners to God in a great way. Ra'im Ba'olam Hazeh, evil in this world. Chateim and sinners L'Olam Haba. Aval Omdim B'Din. But they do come back, and they are Omid B'Din Latid Lavo. Rabbi Nechemia Omer. Elu ve'elu ein omdim b'din. Neither of these are omid b'din. Anshei Dor HaMabul v'anshei Sedom. The Anshei Dor HaMabul, the Tanakhama agreed to, and he said they are the ein omid b'din. Anshei Sedom, the Tanakhama said they are omid b'din. And over here, Rabbi Nechemia argues on that point. Shneamar, again, yukum rishayim b'mishpat v'chataim be'adat tzadikim. It says that the rishayim, when someone is designated as a rasha, Lo yakum al mishpat. They won't be available for a mishpat in the future. Ve'chataim ba'adat tzadikim, and they will not be amongst the tzadikim who do return. Al kein lo yakum rishayim b'mishpat zedor mabul. Because it says ki rabah ra'at adam. So they're the ones who are included in al kein lo yakum rishayim b'mishpat. That Tanakham agreed to. Ve'chataim ba'adat tzadikim, and the sinners amongst the tzadikim elu anshei Sidom, who were called chataim. The chataim will not be with the adat tzadikim. That's why they don't get up for a din. Amrulo, in alomdim ba'adat tzadikim, avalomdim ba'adat rishayim. Tanakhama answers him and says, no, the pasuk said they won't be amongst the tzadikim, but they will be amongst the rishayim. So they will come back to life and be judged again, but they won't be judged in the same grouping as the tzadikim. They'll be in a different group of the rishayim. Miraglim, Ein Lehem Melech Le'olam Haba. Question of whether this belongs in the Girsa or not. Miraglim don't have a portion of Olam Haba. Shneamar, V'yamutu Anashim Motzei Davat Haaretz Ra'ah B'Magefa Lifnei Hashem V'yamutu Bo'olam Hazeh B'Magefa Le'olam Haba. Dor HaMidbar, Ein Lehem Chelek Le'olam Haba V'Ein Omdim B'Din. They don't have a Chelek Le'olam Haba, and they don't stand up to be judged in the future. Shneamar, V'Midbar Hazeh Yitamu, that they will be finished off in this desert. Visham Yamutu, and there they will die. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So you again have the duplication of language. Bemidbar Zei Tamu, they'll be finished off in this midbar. Visham Yamutu, and they will die. Why do you need the language twice? To teach you that Ein Lehem Chelek Le'olam Haba and Ein Omdim B'Din. Blaz Omer, Aleim Omer, on them it says, Isvuli Chasidai, gather together for me my Chasidim, Kortei Briti, Alei Zabach. Those that have made a covenant with me by a sacrifice. That's a reference to the Dor HaMidbar, because the Dor HaMidbar were the ones who were Korei Brit. They're the ones who stood at Har Sinai and brought Zvachim before Hashem. It says, Yisvuli, bring them to me. So you see here that they are brought back in the end. Adad Korach, Eina Atida Lalot. Again, here Rabbi Kiva has a similar refrain with regards to Adad Korach, that in the future they will never come back up. Shneva v'techas aleihem haaretz b'olam hazeh. They were covered over by the land in this world, but yovdu mitoch ha'kahal, and they were lost from the kahal, the olam haba. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Lezer omer aleihem hu omer. Again, Rabbi Lezer retorts and says, no. Hashem me'mit u'michaye, morid sh'ol v'yal. From Tfilat Chana, he quotes, Hashem causes those to die, u'michaye, brings them back to life. Morid sh'ol, puts people into the depths, v'yal, and takes them out. So you see here that even people who go into the depths can be taken out as well. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Kuf Chet Amud Aleph.